Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, May 15th. I'm your reader, Glorietta Foley. Let's start today's reading with a look at the weather. Today it says isolated storms possible, winds south at 5 to 15 miles per hour, high of 66, low of 50. Looks like Iowa City, high of 66, low of 51. And Sunday, we're looking at a high of 74, low of 54. Isolated storms still possible. Cedar Rapids, Iowa City has a high of 75, low of 55. Monday for Cedar Rapids looks like partly cloudy. High of 76, low of 55. Iowa City, high of 77, low of 56. And on Tuesday, partly cloudy. Cedar Rapids, high of 77, low of 58. Iowa City, high of 78, low of 59. Now let's take a look at our top stories on the front page. In search of lifeguards, Cedar Rapids bumps wage to $12. Trans-American customer service complaints rise, and CDC mask guidance provokes criticism, confusion. We'll start with in search of lifeguards. CR bumps wage to $12. City seeks 45 more to open Beaver, Jones, and Ellis pools. In an effort to stay afloat amid a nationwide lifeguard shortage, the Cedar Rapids Parks and Recreation Department is looking to hire 45 more lifeguards to operate Beaver, Jones, and Ellis Municipal Pools this summer and has boosted wages to better compete. Cedar Rapids is not alone in facing a shortage of lifeguard applicants, which threatens to put a damper on its phased openings of municipal pools. From Arizona to Wisconsin, media reports show pools around the country are struggling to recruit lifeguards as COVID-19 restrictions are lifted and communities work to catch up on training backlog. Lifeguards who are currently hired will staff the larger city pools. Knoll Ridge Aquatic Center is scheduled to open starting Memorial Day weekend. Cherry Hill Aquatic Center begins daily operations June 2nd after a June 1st kickoff evening swim. Those larger pools are opening first as they allow for more social distancing and higher capacity. The city previously announced Beaver, Jones, and Ellis pools are slated to open the last week of June in the afternoons, but first the city has recruiting lifeguards to staff them. Cedar Rapids has trained over 95 people in lifeguarding classes since November, with at least 50 of those individuals set to work at the city's pools. Parks and Recreation Director Scott Hawk said, "But with pools closed last summer in the pandemic and not as many lifeguards to return for another summer as a result, the city needed to recruit and train more this year than usual. In hopes of drawing more applicants, the city boosted lifeguard starting wages to $12 per hour, up from $10 initially, to compete with other businesses, some of which have raised pay to entice workers to apply. Businesses nationwide are seeing a struggle to recruit employees as COVID-19 vaccinations increase and in-person operations begin to return to pre-pandemic levels. Quote, within the lifeguarding world, it's a flexible schedule job. It's a fun job, so there are some other perks that we feel are with it. So we hope that $12 makes us really competitive against some of those fast food industry ones that are struggling as well," end quote, Hawk said. Offerings at the three smaller pools that are planned to open at the end of June will be made depending on ultimate staffing levels, Hawk said, but the goal is for the city to be able to open all three. Additional incentives are available for Cedar Rapids lifeguards this year. To qualify, the individual must be age 15 or older, submit an application, be hired by the city, attend required training, and work at least part-time through June. Incentives include a reimbursement of up to $120 on the lifeguard certification class fee, a $50 reward for having a friend sign up and take the lifeguard certification class with you. Wages increase by $2, $3, or $4 respectively for the last 3 weeks of the season if the worker remains in good standing throughout the summer. Cedar Rapids will hold a seasonal job fair from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the ITC Pavilion in Knoll Ridge Park, 4900 Council Street Northeast by the Lagoon. Their department staff will discuss job openings at golf courses, parks, programs, and pools, answer questions about the hiring process, and conduct interviews. Individuals may complete applications at the site or apply online by searching for seasonal jobs at cedar-rapids.com www.cityhires.org. The city hires individuals age 16 and above for golf and park seasonal labor, and age 15 and above for lifeguards. Golf cashiers and park construction laborers must be 18 and above. Hiring continues through the first week of June. Hawk said the city did not offer lifeguard classes during the pandemic, but officials started the training again recently as case numbers have fallen and are working to get few more classes in. As long as applicants know how to swim, Hawk said, anyone interested can take the class to learn how to be a lifeguard. Some applicants may already have lifeguard certification and not need to take the classes, he added. Quote, we are really working to try and get as much back safely this summer as we can, end quote, Hawk said. We'll continue with our next story. CDC mask guidance provokes criticism, confusion. Questions remain as most Americans still unvaccinated. Federal health officials' decision Thursday to rescind almost all masking and distancing recommendations for fully vaccinated Americans created as much confusion as it did celebration, sending states, businesses, and individuals scrambling to figure out what rules, if any, are still appropriate and when. Many, including President Joe Biden, hailed the relaxation of restrictions by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as a milestone that signaled a return to normal. But with the majority of Americans unvaccinated, others question the sudden and blanket recommendation, worrying the onus is now heavier on state and local governments, businesses, and individuals to determine whether precautions are necessary. They fear the guidelines could undercut two of the simplest and most effective tools, mask and physical distancing, for stopping the spread of the virus, still affecting about 35,000 people in the U.S. every day. Two of the nation's medical societies, the American Society of Transplantation and the American Academy of Pediatrics, on more than a dozen physicians interviewed Friday, also expressed concern the decision was premature, coming only days after regulators cleared a vaccine for 12 and 15-year-olds and when so many still are unprotected. Quote, the guidance shifts all the burden onto individuals to be on their honor and choose the appropriate actions when deciding whether to wear a mask, end quote, said Lisa Mirigakis, an infectious disease epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. There is no way to know who is vaccinated and who is not in most scenarios. The likely result is that almost no one would wear a mask, quote unquote. The risk for people who have not yet been vaccinated, including millions of adolescents and children, quote, is going to dramatically increase as the rest of the population abruptly drops masking, end quote, Mirigakis said. Some said the instructions might be more effective if paired with a way to verify people's vaccination status, since that would give peace of mind to those gathering indoors and provide a real incentive to get the shots. Biden administration officials have said so-called vaccine passports would be left to the private sector, and numerous Republican-controlled states have moved to ban such tools. Besides children, those potentially at greater risk include essential workers who interact with the public and millions of immunocompromised people who may be vaccinated but whose bodies might not mount a full immune response, say doctors and labor groups. Quote, it came much faster than we expected, end quote, said Emily Bloomberg, director of the transplant infectious disease at Penn Medicine. Quote, we are not ready for them to be as free as the CDC guidance allows, end quote. The CDC defended the guidance, which allows vaccinated people to go without masks or physical distancing in many cases, even when they are indoors or in large groups. Officials pointed to a study released Friday of nearly 2,000 healthcare workers across 25 states that showed the two mRNA vaccines reduced the risk of illness from COVID-19 by 94%. Federal officials stressed that state and local regulations, as well as rules maintained by businesses, still held sway, but representatives for frontline workers said CDC backing was important for compliance. Quote, I think it ultimately means that we are going to become the vaccination police now, end quote, said Mark Perrion, president of the United Food and Commercial Workers, whose 1.3 million members include meatpackers and nursing home employees. The change was greeted with a shrug in places that had already lifted mask mandates or never maintained them. Quote, that horse has already left the barn, end quote, said Susan Hasig, an infectious disease specialist at Tulane University. Many large businesses, including Target and Home Depot, said they would continue to require employees and customers to wear masks. Meanwhile, pediatricians and other doctors said parents of unvaccinated children and people with weakened immune systems should wear masks and remain vigilant, especially until it's clear how the recommendations affect viral transmission. Our next story, Transamerica customer service complaints rise, long wait times to ask questions make changes. The Gazette Transamerican Corporation, one of Cedar Rapids' largest employers, is under review by the Iowa Insurance Division for a rash of complaints related to the company's taking over customer service for Vanguard Annuity in December. People who complained to the Insurance Division or the Iowa Attorney General's office said they couldn't get through to Transamerica, an investment, retirement, and life insurance company, to check on their investments, make transfers, or seek payouts after the death of a loved one. Quote, I want to know if this company still is solvent, end quote, William Hedder of Mobile, Alabama wrote in January 4th complaint to the Iowa Attorney General's office. Quote, I have tried to contact them numerous times, spending well over 3 hours waiting on hold, including over 1 hour today, to speak to someone. But thus far, I have been able to speak to no one at Transamerica, end quote. Sherry Stewart, a Cedar Rapids native who now lives in Dunafin, Missouri, couldn't get through to Transamerica in February to find out about her father's death benefit, which she needed to settle his estate. She told the Gazette earlier this month. Quote, I never could get through to talk to a human, end quote, Stewart said. Quote, what finally got me through was I stopped payment on his automatic payment, end quote. Quote, they said they were going to cancel his policy and there was a phone number on there. I was on hold for a while, but I finally got through, end quote. Stewart didn't get the issue resolved until April, she said. Vera Beth Bricker, 94, of Victor, just wanted to see a breakdown of benefits of her life insurance policy. The monthly premiums had more than doubled, and Bricker was trying to decide whether it was worth it to keep the policy. Beth Henning, Bricker's friend and helper, told the Gazette. Transamerica wouldn't give Bricker the benefit illustration until she paid $2,400 for 3 months of premiums, Henning said. Quote, I call that blackmailing, quote, Bricker added. Her lawyer filed a complaint on her behalf to the Iowa Attorney General's office. Although customer service complaints aren't unusual, especially for a large multinational company, gripes about Transamerica went up in January after Transamerica took over customer service for the Vanguard Variable Annuity block of business, said Chance McGillany, spokesperson for the Iowa Insurance Division. The IID noted increased call volume in January 2021 from consumers seeking information about Transamerica and their Vanguard annuity, end quote, he said. Quote, the Iowa Insurance Division has communicated with Transamerica in regards to the customer service issues and is monitoring its progress as it works through the transition of the customer service function from Vanguard to Transamerica customer service, end quote. The Iowa Attorney General's office reported having 6 complaints about Transamerica since December 1st. The Iowa Insurance Division would not say how many formal complaints it has received, but said office staff also has fielded phone calls about Transamerica that did not turn into formal complaints. For some longtime Vanguard customers, the transfer of their business to Transamerica was disappointing and disturbing. Vanguard founder John Bogle started the first index fund, the Vanguard Fund, in 1975. The investment advisor has continued to be popular because it offers low-cost, low-maintenance investing. In 2018, Harris Poll, Vanguard was one of the only financial service companies recognized for its strong brand, Forbes reported. Geo Mayer, 83, of Tampa, Florida, who is retired from the international construction business, at one time had as much as $15 million invested with Vanguard. But after Transamerica took over the variable annuity block in December, Mayer no longer could make fund transfers by phone and saw that some online information about his account, such as the name of his primary beneficiary, was inaccurate, he said. Mayer said he asked Transamerica on January 7th to send him a check for $20,000, which should have been done within a day or two. When he didn't have it by January 21st, he asked for a wire transfer, which happened January 26th, Mayer said. Quote, I have been unable to receive an explanation for the unacceptable and costly delays. In response to questions from the Gazette, the Transamerica apologized for customer service delays. quote, "We are actively working to make things right for our customers," end quote, a company spokesman responded in a May 5th email. Quote, "We have several resolution steps underway, including adding more customer care staff and cross-training additional staff. We also enhance communications to Transamerica VVA customers through Transamerica's website. We assure our customers that their accounts are safe and that information regarding Transamerica's ratings and financial strength is publicly available via our website. In 2020, Transamerica fulfilled its promises to customers, paying more than $49 billion in insurance, retirement, and annuity claims and benefits, including return of annuity premiums paid by the customer," end quote. Transamerica, a subsidiary of Aegon, a life insurance company based in the Netherlands, has been scaling back its Cedar Rapids operations in recent years. Cedar Rapids economic development officials said in November the company had 3,800 full-time positions in town, but a company spokesperson said earlier this month there were 2,700 employees in Cedar Rapids. The company laid off 53 Cedar Rapids employees in November and in March put 6 Cedar Rapids buildings up for sale as it consolidated operations on C Street Southwest. In 2018, Transamerica signed a $2 billion deal with India-based Tata Consultancy Services that was supposed to, quote, rapidly enhance its digital capabilities, simplify the service of more than 10 million policies into a single integrated modern platform, and drive greater sustainable growth opportunities through superior customer services, end quote, according to a news release from Tata. Transamerica is scheduled for trial in September in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Iowa in a class action lawsuit filed in 2019 by employees who say the company mismanaged a 401k investment, costing employees retirement income. Looking inside the paper, court, no refunds for wrongly issued tickets. Iowa Supreme Court ruling likely means state won't have to refund millions in fines. The Iowa Supreme Court on Friday unanimously rejected the appeal of a man who said the state should refund a $465 fine he paid for a speeding ticket on the heels of an earlier high court ruling that said commercial vehicle patrol officers could not issue such tickets. The high court's ruling likely means the state is off the hook for refunding millions of dollars in fines collected from tens of thousands of drivers wrongly ticketed over several years by motor vehicle enforcement officers employed by the Iowa Department of Transportation. A carrier enforcement officer stopped Ricky Relia for speeding in 2016. Relia pleaded guilty to the charge and paid the fine, but later sued to challenge the authority of the officer to issue speeding tickets. In 2018, the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that state law limited carrier enforcement officers that issue tickets only for violations relating to operating authority, registration, size, weight, and load of commercial vehicles, not for any other violations. State lawmakers changed the law in 2017 to allow carrier enforcement officers to issue tickets for a full range of traffic violations. In a separate lawsuit, Relia sought to recoup his $465 fine, as well as a class action status that would allow thousands of motorists ticketed by carrier enforcement officers in the 5 to 6 years before the law was changed to also recover the fines they had paid. Des Moines lawyer Brandon Brown, who responded to Relia, has said his research turned up more than 22,000 drivers wrongly ticketed by Iowa DOT carrier enforcement officers from 2014 to 2016. The average ticket was about $150, he said, potentially amounting to more than $3.3 million in wrongfully paid fines over 2 years. Relia argued in the lawsuit that the state was unjustly enriched by the collection of fines on illegally issued tickets. But the state Supreme Court sided with the lower court that found that the time for Relia to have objected to the fine was during the criminal portion of his case, not with the civil lawsuit. Quote, as the district court correctly held, the state's retention of Relia's payment of the fine would only become unlawful if the underlying conviction were to overturn, unquote. Justice Matthew McDermott wrote for the court. Quote, Relia's conviction has never been challenged, let alone overturned, end quote. In fact, the opinion noted Relia freely admitted he had been speeding in a construction zone when he pleaded guilty. The deadline for Relia to appeal his conviction has long since passed, the High Court said. Brown, Ralea's attorney, declined to comment Friday until he had a chance to speak to Ralea about the ruling. The Iowa Attorney General's office referred request and comment to the Iowa Department of Transportation. The Iowa Department of Transportation Communications Director Andrea Henry lauded Friday's ruling. She said she was unaware of any other lawsuits seeking refunds on tickets from carrier enforcement officers. Quote, all of our officers go through the same law enforcement training as every other officer in the state, end quote, Henry said. Our next story, Iowa Republican lawmakers ironing out their differences. State funding for mental health is a major sticking point in negotiations over Reynolds' plan. After 18 weeks of conversations about differences in their approaches to taxes, spending, and state takeover of mental health funding, improving access and affordability of child care and other issues, Republican legislators and Governor Kim Reynolds haven't reached an agreement. However, quote, progress is being made, end quote, House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican New Hartford, said Friday after the House two-minute session. Quote, as I've said before, just because it doesn't look like there's no activity going on here, that doesn't mean things aren't getting done, end quote, Grassley said in a virtual news conference from the Capitol. The focus on negotiations is a sweeping, quote, compromise, end quote, proposed by Reynolds that would provide $400 million in tax relief. Senate File 619 calls for eliminating the 2018 state income tax triggers, compressing brackets and reducing rates, phasing out the, quote, unquote, backfill aid to local government and the state inheritance tax, and exempting taxation on COVID-19 assistance. It also incorporates various issues including housing, energy, infrastructure, child care tax credits, and telehealth parity. A major sticking point in negotiations, Grassley said, is the state takeover of funding mental health services, which now is paid for out of the county's property taxes. For the most part, House Republicans agree with the concept, but not necessarily how to do it. Quote, I would say that while the spirit of wanting to address these issues is certainly in place, our trajectory for getting across the finish line has at times been complicated, end quote, Grassley said. Although he would not predict when the legislature will complete its session, which already has run 2 weeks past its scheduled adjournment, Grassley held out hope that agreements can be reached this weekend to make it possible to wrap up the session next week. Paying for mental health services out of state general funds would reduce the local property tax burden by $100 million, according to Reynolds' plan. That is something House Republicans can get behind, Grassley said, but they want to make sure there is accountability, that Iowans have the same level of access to mental health services regardless of where they live. As opposed to the position on Senate Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, that, quote, if we don't do it now, folks, this is never going to happen, end quote. Grassley didn't close the door on a phased takeover of mental health funding. Quote, it's more important, I think, for House Republicans to make sure we're doing this the right way than necessarily rushing something through, end quote, he said. Quote, if it takes a little bit more time, we're willing to work on that, end quote. We'll take a look at some nation and world news. West Bank erupts amid Israel-Hamas fighting. West Bank Gaza Strip turmoil from the battle between Israel and Hamas spilled over into the West Bank on Friday, sparking the most widespread Palestinian protest in years as hundreds of young demonstrators in multiple towns clashed with Israeli troops who shot and killed at least 11 people. Israel intensified bombardment of the Gaza Strip with a furious overnight barrage of tank fire and airstrikes that wreaked destruction in some towns, killed a family of six in their house, and sent thousands fleeing their homes. The Israeli military said the operation involved 160 warplanes dropping some 80 tons of explosives over the course of 40 minutes and succeeded in destroying a network of tunnels used by Hamas to elude airstrikes and surveillance. Israel appeared determined to inflict as much damage as possible on Gaza's Hamas rulers before international efforts for a ceasefire accelerated. Since Monday night, Hamas has fired hundreds of rockets into Israel, which has pounded the Gaza Strip with strikes. In Gaza, at least 126 people have been killed, including 31 children. In Israel, 7 people have been killed, including a 6-year-old boy and a soldier. Huda Oda said she and her extended family ran frantically into their home in the Gaza town of Buet Hunan, seeking safety as the earth shook in the darkness. Quote, we even did not dare to look from the window to know what is being hit, end quote, she said. When daylight came, she saw the destruction, streets cratered, buildings crushed, or with facades blown off, an olive tree burnt bare, dust covering everything. The conflict, which was sparked by tensions in Jerusalem during the past month, has reverberated widely. Israeli cities with mixed Arab and Jewish populations have seen daily violence, with mobs from each community clashing and trashing each other's property. New clashes broke out Friday in the coastal city of Acre. In the occupied West Bank, on the outskirts of Ramallah, Nablus, and other towns and cities, hundreds of Palestinians protested against the Gaza campaign and Israeli actions in Jerusalem. Waving Palestinian flags, they trucked in tires that they set up in burning barricades and hurled stones at Israeli soldiers. At least 10 protesters were shot and killed by soldiers. An 11th Palestinian was killed when he tried to stab a soldier at a military position. In East Jerusalem, online videos showed young Jewish nationalists firing pistols as they traded volleys of stone with Palestinian in Sheikh Jarrah, which became a flashpoint for tensions over attempts by settlers to forcibly evict a number of Palestinian families from their homes. On Israel's northern border, troops opened fire when a group of Lebanese and Palestinian protesters on the other side cut through a border fence and briefly crossed. One Lebanese was killed. Three rockets were fired toward Israel from neighboring Syria, but they either landed in Syrian territory or in empty areas, Israeli media said. Next, we'll take a look at, in devotion to Trump, House GOP taps new leader, Stefanik. House Republicans elevated Representative Elise Stefanik to a leadership post Friday, highlighting how the party, whose lodestar has long been conservative policies, increasingly views allegiance to Donald Trump as its indispensable key to electoral success. Stefanik, a Trump stalwart from upstate New York, was elected to the number three leadership job that until this week belonged to Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Republicans tossed Cheney from that post for continually calling out former President Donald Trump for helping spur the violence on January 6th Capitol insurrection and relentlessly pushing his false claims that voting fraud caused his November defeat. Local officials and judges from both parties around the country have declared there is no evidence Trump was cheated out of a win. Stefanik easily defeated Representative Chip Roy of Texas, 134 to 46, in a secret ballot that gave GOP lawmakers a distinct choice about where to steer the party. Stefanik has a moderate voting record, but strong backing from Trump and other party leaders, including some conservatives, while Roy is in the hard right House Freedom Caucus and is actively opposed by the former president. In remarks to reporters after her victory, Stefanik underscored how the twice-impeached Trump clout within the GOP remains potent and rarity for a defeated former president. Polling shows strong Trump loyalty among Republican voters, giving party leaders little incentive to ostracize him. Quote, voters determined the leader of the Republican Party and President Trump is the leader that they look to, end quote, said Stefanik, 36. She added, quote, he is an important voice in the Republican Party, and we look forward to working with him, end quote. While the GOP defines itself as conservative, Stefanik's win provided one measure of the diminished role ideology now plays for Republicans. Her lifetime voting score from the Conservative Heritage Action for Americans is 48, one of the most moderate marks of all House Republicans. That compares with Cheney's 80 and Roy's 96. The Conservative Club for Growth, which backed Roy, gives Stefanik a lifetime mark of 35. This is below Cheney's 65 and Roy's 100, and even beneath Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, a member of the quote-unquote squad of progressive House Democrats, who scored a 38. And let's see, let's take a look at one more story here for the World News. House to vote soon on bills to protect the Capitol. One would establish panel to investigate January 6th insurrection. The House is expected to vote next week on two bills aimed at preventing more attacks on the U.S. Capitol, with one seeking to establish a 9/11-style commission to study what went wrong January 6th, and the other allocating $1.9 billion to address the security problems revealed by the insurrection. The top Democrat and top Republican on the House Homeland Security Committee on Friday unveiled their plan to form a commission after weeks of delicate negotiations. Modeled after the revered investigation into the 9/11 terrorist attack, their bill would establish an independent 10-member commission, evenly divided between the two parties, that would have subpoena power and an end-of-year deadline for completing its work. Efforts to stand up to the commission had previously stalled amid partisan differences, with Republicans, including Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, arguing that its scope should be widened to look at violence in cities around the country in the past year in reaction to the killings of George Floyd while in police custody. But the new bill appeared to be a breakthrough after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the legislation must be bipartisan. The emergency spending bill also was released Friday, a product of months of reviews about what is needed to quote-unquote harden security at the Capitol after the violent mob of former President Donald Trump supporters pushed past police officers and broke through windows and doors on January 6. The legislation would include money for new retractable fencing around the building, added training and resources for Capitol Police, and better security for members of Congress, among other measures. And that'll bring us to the halfway point of the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, May 15th. On IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service, I am Gloria DeFoli, your reader today, and it has been my pleasure to read for you. We will continue today's reading with the obituary section, starting with Mr. Richard Ryle. Richard Ryle, 75, of Cedar Rapids, passed away May 12th following a short illness. Richard was born June 13, 1945, the ninth child of John and Clara Ryle in a family of 10 children. He grew up on the farm side of Peyton and had fond memories of youth spent working and playing in the fields and barns with his siblings. The family had several animals, but he had his own special pet, Rodney, a squirrel he found in the grain bin and nurtured back to health. Richard spent his career in construction, working for 40 years at Minifee Drywall, a job he greatly enjoyed. He was incredibly handy and could build or fix anything, a talent he generously shared with his family and friends. The city is filled with projects that display his skills, from humble treehouses to multi-story office buildings. Richard's true passion was his family. He married Kay Sutter for 52 years. They had four children, all of whom absolutely adored their dad and agreed that it would be impossible to find a more loving, patient, sweet, and funny father. One of their fondest memories is of his bedtime stories about Joey the monkey. He went on to share these stories and his wonderfully warm presence with his four grandchildren. Richard will be remembered for his incredible generosity. He was completely selfless, always focused on helping and caring for others. He also will be remembered for his youthful spirit, including his love of jokes, magic, games, and silly songs. His favorite food eaten daily was ice cream, especially homemade vanilla. His rule was that if you didn't help crank it, you couldn't eat it, although there are no reports of anyone ever being denied a scoop. Richard loved the outdoors, hunting for Moro mushrooms with his kids and going on birding adventures with Kay. He worked a side job at the Indian Creek Nature Center for 20 years, simply because he enjoyed spending time in the woods and prairies. There will be a visitation on Sunday, May 16th, from 3 to 6 p.m., at the Chapel State Room in Cedar Memorial, and a service on May 17th, which is Monday, at 10:30 a.m. at the Chapel of Memories at Cedar Memorial. Following the service, there will be a lunch at Indian Creek Nature Center at 12:30 p.m. Memorial donations can be made to Indian Creek Nature Center. Following the continued proclamations issued by the governor, physical distancing must be practiced, which may require a limited number of people allowed into a visitation at one time, and limited seating available at the service. The use of facial coverings is strongly encouraged. Next, Mr. Bruce Engelbart. Bruce Engelbart, 69, of Anamosa, passed unexpectedly at Jones Regional Medical Center in Anamosa. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m., Monday, May 17th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Anamosa. the Reverend Nick March will officiate. Burial will be in Holy Cross Cemetery in Anamosa. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, May 16th, at the Gotts Funeral Home in Anamosa, where the Knights of Columbus will lead the rosary at 7 p.m. Due to the current health pandemic, face mask coverings, the nose and mouth are required at all times, and social distancing will be practiced at the funeral home and the church. For those unable to attend, the service will be live streamed at Gotts Funeral Home Facebook page. Bruce Engelbart was born February 19, 1952, in Monticello, the son of Marvin and Elfrida Engelbart. He began his education at the country schoolhouse in Amber, where the Wayne Zion Lutheran Church community played an important part in his upbringing. Bruce graduated with the class of 1970, one of the first classes to attend the new Anamosa High School. He was active in FFA, 4-H, and Raider football. On August 31, 1973, he married Sherry Huter at St. Patrick's. Together with Bruce's family, they operated Amberlago Holstein Dairy Farms until 1985. Bruce went on to specialize in CAD, computer-assisted drafting, and had a career helping develop patented technologies at various corporations, including General Electric, Lockheed Martin, Seagate, and most recently, John Deere. Throughout his second career, Bruce's passions for farming remained. He took pride most recently in partnering with Nation Shoup in planting his crops. A lifelong resident of Anamosa area, he was a member of the St. Patrick's Church, the Knights of Columbus, Jones County Dairy Farmers, and various other dairy organizations. He volunteered with the Jones County Democrats and could be seen manning their booth at the Great Jones County Fair. He enjoyed art, card games, the oldies, classic movies, cheering for the Hawkeyes, and taking his home projects, renovating every structure on the farm, including the family home. He will be remembered as a genuine soul of quirky humor who loved and cared for the land, took joy in his children and grandchildren, and provided for those he loved. He took particular pride in the life, family, and home he built with his wife through years of hard work and partnership. Memorial donations can be directed to the family for distribution to local charities. Next, we have Miss Judith Stucker, 84, a longtime resident of Iowa City, passed Monday, May 10th at her home. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, May 23rd at Gay and Shia Funeral Home and Cremation Service, where there will be a time of visitation 1 hour prior to the services and following the services. The services also can be viewed by family and friends through the live streaming feature on the funeral home's website at www.gayandcha.com at Judith's page under obituary. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made in her memory to the First United Methodist Church of Iowa City or Iowa City Hospice. Judith Grell was born November 8, 1936, in Huron, South Dakota, the daughter of Charles and Fern Grell. Following high school, she attended and graduated from Morningside College in Sioux City. She married Richard Dick Stucker on June 2, 1957, in Sioux City. The couple and their family lived in Sibley for 25 years, where Judy worked for public schools for more than 20 years. Judy and Dick moved to Iowa City in 1984, and here she worked at Iowa Book and Supply for more than 20 years. Here there have been members of the First United Methodist Church. Judy simply loved being married to Dick and mom to their children. After being a grandmother and a great-grandmother, was the icing on the cake. She really enjoyed watching Hawkeye sports and lots of other sports with her husband. She was very knowledgeable about what she watched. She enjoyed decorating their townhome like only she could. She loved her knickknacks, always making holidays extra special for her family and their friends. At Thanksgiving, she would serve chicken instead of turkey, even to the protest of some family members, but they soon realized her chicken was better than any turkey they had ever tasted. At Christmas, she made a very best party mix, and everyone in the family craved it. She even fulfilled special orders like cashews only. Many great memories of the pine smell of our house, the tree, of the decorations, the music, Andy Williams was her favorite, the thoughtful gifts, and the coarse church, food, family, and friends. She truly cherished many blessings in her life. Next, we will continue with Mary Elizabeth Betty Dale. Mary Betty Dale passed away peacefully Thursday, May 13th at Mercy Hospital, surrounded by family. Mass of Catholic burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Monday, May 17th at St. Patrick Church with Father Ivan Nias officiating. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday at Cedar Memorial West Chapel, Cedar Rapids. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to ALS Association in honor of her late husband, Robert. Quote, following the continued proclamations issued by the governor, physical distancing must be practiced, which may require a limited number of people allowed into a visitation at one time, and limited seating available at services. The use of facial coverings is strongly encouraged, end quote. Betty was born September 4, 1938 in Purnell to Viola and Joseph Berry. She was united in marriage to Bob Dale on December 29, 1956 in Cedar Rapids and enjoyed a long and loving marriage. They were blessed with three children and many family members and friends who will miss her daily. Betty was a longtime member of St. Patrick Catholic Church, where she sang in the choir and volunteered with funeral dinners. She will be dearly missed by her family and friends. And lastly, we have Marilyn Turner. Marilyn D. Turner, 67, of Marshalltown, formerly of Urbana and Cedar Point, or Center Point, passed away unexpectedly from complications from surgery on April 30th. Per Marilyn's request, cremation was performed and no services are planned at this time. Marilyn served in the Navy from December 71 to December 72. He received the National Defense Service Medal, ranked discharged at E3. He worked as a waterman in Nevada, as well as a scrap metal factory. Marilyn lived at the Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown since 2009. He loved motorcycles, anything Harley, and horses, and playing touchscreen games as a pastime. I'm quoting from the man who said it best. Marilyn loved his beer and women, and he used cuss words as nouns, verbs, and adjectives, all in the same sentence. Marilyn had a huge heart and was kind and loving soul. He made everyone laugh. Marilyn would be missed by all who knew him. We would like to thank the doctors and staff at Unity Point Hospital in Marshalltown for staying with Marilyn and being so caring during this time, and to Wyatt Manship and staff at Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown for his amazing care, being a part of his life and putting up with his humor and helping us communicate with him. Memorials may be made to Daryl Moore or make a donation in Marilyn's name to the Marshalltown, Iowa Veterans Home. Now we will continue today's reading with our opinion section. We have an editorial today, "Aren't You Glad You Aren't a Kid Today?" A survey of almost 2,000 parents of kids ages 5 to 11 in Britain found that most parents aren't letting their kids play outside unsupervised until age 11, The Guardian reports. This is despite the fact that when the parents were growing up, they headed out to play around age 9. Tim Gill, author of Urban Playground, How Child-Friendly Planning and Design Can Save Cities, a longtime champion of more freedom for kids, said the study shows, quote, the British children have been subjected to gradual creeping lockdown over at least a generation, end quote. He added, quote, thanks to the pandemic, we all know what lockdown feels like, end quote. So why are we doing this to our kids? The reason are the unusual adult fears of crime and traffic dovetailing with the fact that electronic entertainment keeps many kids from longing for the outdoors. Of course, our desire to keep kids safe makes sense. What is hard to keep in mind when worrying about the dangers of letting them leave the house is that there are dangers to not letting them leave the house. Gill lists them in boredom, isolation, inactivity, and poor mental and physical health. The consequences for their development and well-being should not be underestimated, quote unquote. In fact, the consequences are pretty clear. After all, the book Your Six-Year-Old, Loving and Defiant was a standard-issued child development book for parents published in 1979. Over the course of just 40 years, it has become an amazing artifact. According to the book's checklist, your average six-year-old entering first grade should have been able to knock off simple milestones. Does your child have 2 to 5 permanent or single or second teeth? Can your child ride a two-wheeled bicycle without helper wheels? Can your child tell left hand from right hand? Can your child travel alone in the neighborhood 4 to 8 blocks to the store, school, and playground, or to a friend's home? Keeping kids under adult supervision until they are almost twice that age, 11 instead of 6, is a shocking development. Imagine if we kept kids in diapers until age 8, or didn't let them start driving until age 30, which is secretly something I'd love, but I realize that is widely off point. It's dizzying to think how quickly we have come to see kids as helpless instead of spunky. If the crime rate has soared in the interceding decades, extra caution might make sense. But here in America, where, like Britain, we are almost keeping kids under very close tabs for more and more years, the crime rate is back to what it was in the 60s and 70s. Crime was on an increase until the early 90s, but then it started heading back down, way down. So parents who were playing outside in the 80s and 90s were allowed when crime rate was higher than it is today. The University of Reading's Helen Dodd, who led the study, says, quote, "We can clearly see that there is a trend to be protective and to provide less freedom for our children now than in previous generations," end quote. Unfortunately, the older kids are, before they get to moving, exploring and playing on their own, the less chance they get to develop, quote, "their ability to assess and manage risk independently," end quote, Dodd said. Our own risk calculations are pretty off when we think we are keeping kids safer by stunting their physical and psychological growth by treating them like babies for 11 long cycling years. Continue with a community letter. Democrats don't want to toss the Second Amendment. I know a lot of Democrats, not just in Iowa. I haven't heard one ever say they wanted to eliminate the Second Amendment rights. Many say they favor laws to limit access to the types of weapons that have been used in mass killings of innocent, law-abiding citizens, children, worshipers, concertgoers, shoppers, etc. I'm sick of hearing accusations of Democrats wanting to eliminate the Second Amendment. I'm especially incensed that Representative Ashley Hinson referred to President Biden's executive action to limit stabilizing braces and ghost guns as making, quote, "millions of lawful gun owners criminals," end quote. Even the Gazette gave Hinson a D on April 24th edition for her assertions. It's clear that she has no interest in considering the variety of viewpoints among her constituents, rather only those of NRA supporters. America averages 117 deaths per day from guns. Media reports COVID-19 numbers and plane crashes that kill 3 people, but doesn't report the daily gun deaths, another epidemic. Also, none of my Democratic acquaintances want to quote-unquote defund the police, but rather look at how resources might be reallocated for overall community health. And it wasn't Democrats who lied about the lawful democratic process and stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Our democracy protects peaceful protests of injustices, not violence. Let's work together on improvement, not insurrection. That was from Joanne McNeil of Cedar Rapids. So with that, we'll move on over to talk about some sports. Let's go over the sideline brief stories. College softball: Dulcie leads Hawks 3-1 win over Illinois. Iowa started its final series of season last night by beating Illinois 3-1 at Pearl Field. Senior pitcher Allison Dulcie limited the Illinois to 3 hits, and Iowa 24-17 manufactured its runs. Junior Riley Sheehy had a RBI triple, and Denali Loker had a sac fly RBI. The two teams play a doubleheader today at 1 p.m. Next, Kelly singles home game winner for UNI. Northern Iowa got a 2-out walk-off RBI single from Hannah Kelly, who defeated Missouri State on Friday in a semifinal round of the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament at Cooper Stadium. UNI 31-17 now faces the Southern Illinois 36-14 at 1 p.m. today in the championship on ESPN+. The Salukis upset top seed Illinois State 7-2. Kalen Packer got the pitching win for the Panthers, limiting the Bears to 4 hits while striking out 9. Next, Luther advances to ARC championship. Fourth-seeded Luther beat Buena Vista 2-0. And 3-2 Friday at Clark Field to advance to the championship series of the American Rivers Conference Tournament. Luther 29-14 faces 6th seed Nebraska Wesleyan 16-19 in 2 games at noon today at Clark Field. If a third game is needed, it'll be played at 1 p.m. Sunday. In the first win over the Beavers, Kyle Hitt had a two-run double for the Norris. Kendrick Cooper pitched a five-hit shutout, striking out five. Cooper got another pitching win in the second game, limiting BV to just three hits. Sydney Schultz had a two-run home run for Luther. Next, Central League, strong pitching leads Colonels to first road win. The Cedar Rapids Colonels got their first road win last night, 6-2 over Quad Cities at Modern Woodman Park. CR pitchers Cody Funderbrook, Derek Molina, Jordan Gore, and Zach Featherstone combined to hold QC to five hits, striking out 14. Also Friday, the Colonels added outfielder Lebaldo Cabrera from Low A Fort Myers. Cabrera previously played 4 years with New York Yankees organization. And then in women's basketball, Cyclones added 6'3" center from Portugal. Iowa State has added a 6'3" junior center transfer from South Florida. Patrice Duarte, who is from Pombal, Portugal, played 63 games with the Bulls, averaging 4.4 points and 3.6 rebounds per game. We'll talk about a little Cubs baseball here. Bryant's Cubs cool off lukewarm Tigers. In Detroit, Chris Bryant hit a two-run homer, and the Cubs won 4-2 and snapped the Tigers' four-game winning streak. Jared Arrieta, 4-3, faced a minimum number of hitters until the bottom of the sixth when Detroit's Jake Rogers and Robbie Grossman hit consecutive home runs with two outs. That was all the scoring for the Tigers, who entered the night with the second-worst record in baseball, percentage points ahead of Minnesota. Tarik Skubal, 0-6, allowed 4 runs and 8 hits in 6 innings. Jock Peterson had 3 hits for the Cubs, who snapped a 3-game losing streak. Craig Kimbrell struck out of the side in the ninth for a 7th save in 8 chances. The Royals 6-1, White Sox 2-3 game. Rookie Andrew Vaughn started the nightcap at first base after AL MVP Jose Abreu was injured in a frightening collision in the first game. Homer to lead the White Sox to a doubleheader split in Chicago. The Royals ended a 11-game slide in an opener, stopping Chicago's 6-game win streak. The collision occurred in the second inning with Hunter Dozier. After popping up, jogged out of the batter's box with his head down and slammed hard into Abreu as he was tracking the ball, knocking both players to the ground. Abreu suffered a facial bruise and cut along with a bruised left knee. Tests for a concussion were negative and he was listed as day-to-day. Dozier was put on a 7-day concussion injury list. Yankees-Orioles game, 5-4. Aaron Judge went deep twice at Gio Urshela, delivered a key pinch hit shot, leading the banged-up Yankees in Baltimore. Judge is now 10-for-19 with 5 homers against the Orioles this season. Rays 3, Mets 2 in St. Petersburg, Florida. Brett Phillips hit a RBI single with 2 outs in the ninth inning, and Rays stopped the Mets' 7-game winning streak. Red Sox 4, Angels 3. Hunter Fenrow and Bobby Dalbec each hit 2 run homers in Boston. Shohei Ohtani hit his 11th homer for the Angels. Pirates 3, Giants 2. Adam Frazier tripled home the tying run in the 11th inning with his 4th hit of the game and scoring the winner on Gregory Polanek's sacrificing fly in Pittsburgh. Phillies 5, Blue Jays 1. Rays Hoskin hit a 3-run double during Philadelphia's 5-run 7th inning in Duden, Florida. Then there's Astros 10, Rangers 4. In Houston, Martin Maldonado homered and drove in 3 runs to back 7 slide innings from Zach Greinke, and Houston earned its 4th straight victory. Braves 6, Brewers 3, Marcella Ozuna and Ozzie Albies hit Atlanta's first back-to-back homers of the season to help the Braves snap a 3-game skid in Milwaukee. And lastly, Athletics 6, Twins 1, Raymond Lourenço hit the first of Oakland's 4 homers, and Franklin Montanez pitched 6 effective innings in Minneapolis. All right, that will leave time for Dear Abby, titled Mixed Signals, Frustrated Friend Who Wants More. Dear Abby, I'm a lesbian. There's a girl I have liked for a little over a month. We are like best friends. When I told her I was attracted to her, she basically friend-zoned me, which hurt. Then she told me a mutual friend she was considering being, quote, friends with benefits with me, quote unquote, and I got excited. Well, she changed her mind again because she was afraid it would be awkward. I still have a crush on her, but I value our friendship. We spend so much time together, and things are easy, but also challenging because I just want to grab her and kiss her. We snuggle all the time, and she gives me hugs every day. We live in the same dormitory. I want to make out with her. These mixed signals are killing me. What do I do? Signed, Dazed and Confused in Florida. Dear Dazed, you're right. This young woman is giving you mixed signals. That's why you should put her firmly in your friend zone. Stop hugging and snuggling and move on, so you can find someone who reciprocates your feelings. Absence has been known to make the heart grow fonder. Perhaps when she realizes that you are capable of moving on, her feelings for you will change. However, if they don't, you will have lost nothing more than heartache. All right, let's do a quick recap of the weather. Today is going to be isolated storms possible, wind south at 5 to 15 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids, you're looking at a high of 65, low of 50. Iowa City, you're looking at a high of 66, low of 51. On Sunday, isolated storms possible. Cedar Rapids, looking at a high of 74, low of 54. Iowa City, you're looking at a high of 75, low of 55. So that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Saturday, May 15th on IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service for the print handicapped. I've been your reader, Gloria DeFoley. It is my pleasure to read for you today. Thank you for listening and stay safe.